It's Thursday, November 13th, 2014. You're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast about retro video games and sometimes some other things. You're listening to Episode 88, Seems More Like a Nightmare. Runtime for this episode is about 53 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that is still preparing for zombies. My name is Jeremy.
And living in a country with 80% more Ebola and 5% less Nacrofasciitis, I'm Tyler.
I'm not sure what that word means, but I'm waiting on my permit. My name is Zach.
Is it a permit for murder? So you can murder people, but only if someone with a license to kill is looking over your shoulder and advising you?
Yes, it's a permit to kill. I have to complete at least 5 killings of enemy combatants before I get my license.
During the day. You also have to kill 2 at night.
Yes, well, clearly.
I feel like it should be the other way around. I feel like assassins are way more effective at night.
No, see, it's not assassin.
Yeah.
That's a different permit.
Oh, well, I thought you would have to have a license to kill to be an assassin.
It's like a truck driver's license. You have to get a regular license first, and then you...
Yeah, first you get the license to kill, and then you get the CDL, or in this case, the assassin's permit to kill, the APK.
What technical positions can you obtain with a license to kill?
They haven't told me what you can get. It's just henchman. A fun thing, little thing to do.
Okay.
Actually, no, it's between henchman and
lieutenant.
Bad guy. You don't get a name, but you, like, get to be big and burly and you take, like, a scene to fight.
And you have.
And you have a name in the credits.
Okay.
Yeah, an action figure.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, why would I want Bobo?
I don't even know who Bobo is. Remember the big guy? Yeah.
And it's a very good severance package for your family if Indiana Jones just shoots you, even though he's supposed to have a big fight scene with you.
Yeah. Pretty big deal.
I feel like that should be a specific clause laid out for henchmen death policies.
Yeah, like in Venture Brothers, when the Guild of Calamitous Intent has all sorts of rules about henchmen and arching.
I love that arching is a verb in that.
Yeah.
Actually, I would really like to see a Venture Brothers Archer crossover.
That would be amazing.
I'm kind of surprised this never occurred to me until just this moment.
Venture Brothers is produced so slowly it would never work.
Also, a lot of things you don't think of would be good crossovers with one another until somebody brings them both up in relative space to one another.
Like
that is
that
true.
Issue of Sabrina the Teenage Witch where a cult tries to marry her to Cthulhu.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like this should happen more frequently than it does.
Well, she's responsible for the zombies in Afterlife with Archie, and her penance is to marry Cthulhu.
Clearly.
Okay, that's a little odd.
It's great. And she got her own spin-off series that takes place in the 60s, where Betty and Veronica are part of a rival coven trying to curse Archie to love them forever.
See why they would work together for that goal, but I feel like after they succeeded, it would just fall apart.
Well, yeah, that's where the fun comes in. That's where the story is.
He's got a point.
You know, I didn't get to play any Walking Dead this week, and I was super planning on it. Well, speaking of zombies.
What did you play instead, slacker?
Not the Walking Dead. I played a fair amount of Payday. They introduced yet another skill tree to it, so.
I heard John Wick was a super good movie.
I did not see it, but John Wick's a super fun character because he's an asshole, so.
I gotta get back onto that. I've just been busy.
They introduced, his perk deck is actually probably one of the best ones. I really like akimbo weapons.
They added akimbo weapons.
Only pistols. You can only dual wield pistols.
Well, no John Wooing Uzis?
No.
Or shotguns with pistol grips?
That's what I was thinking.
So they introduced a perk deck for John Wick, which is basically, you can be a better hitman by shooting stuff better. But they introduce a skill tree for Old Hoxton, which is Fugitive, which is basically like Combat Ghost. I tried it out and it wasn't really my thing, but I could definitely see where it has a place in the game. It's a person who is designed to wear light armor, but also more geared towards combat than the ghost. So almost
kind of a hybrid between you and me.
Yeah. It synergizes really well with either ghost or mastermind, but I went full fugitive because I didn't realize how many skill points I was spending on it. And I was like dual wielding pistols. I'm like, this is awesome. They have one where you recover armor for every headshot you get. And they have another where you get a 10% higher chance to do critical damage every time you get a headshot with a pistol. Have a bunch of really interesting things that work well together. But
that sounds like it'd probably synergize fairly well with the Enforcer if you got the tree up to the saw, because it gives you the additional damage with pistols and everything like that, and you're still able to tote the saw around, whereas if you're the enforcer, you don't get to do that.
That's also something they added as one of the perk decks. I think it's the armor perk deck, maybe the muscle or the meat shield perk deck. I forget which one. Allows you to wield the saw as a secondary weapon instead of a primary.
That's much better.
I thought you might
sacrifice
that
so much to take that saw.
I really enjoyed The Fugitive, but it does not really suit my playstyle. I don't get as much accomplished when I'm not a ghost. So I spent the 10 million or whatever and became a ghost again. Although I accidentally spent extra skill points somewhere in the mastermind tree, and I don't know where. So
nice.
So I had been up to Kilmer before, and now I'm not. So I don't get my rifle bonuses anymore.
Sadness.
Wait, I thought the rifle bonuses were in the technician tree.
There are bonuses to both. Or there are bonuses to assault rifles in both of them. Kilmer is like your... like 50% more accurate with assault rifles and sniper rifles.
No, that was totally in the technician tree before.
Yeah, well, it's not there anymore, so. They also made, intimidation a lot easier. I've really been enjoying it. They added two new free heists, and they're both pretty good.
So, quick question.
Yes.
Did they fix that one perk that never worked?
No, they still haven't fixed it. The text of it doesn't imply that it ever was intended to apply to the rest of your crew, because there are a lot of them that say, like, this bonus applies to you and your crew, and that one doesn't say that, so. I've also been playing a lot of Smash, and been doing pretty well. My ranking's gone down because I have this, like, obsessive streak of trying to continuously fight people who beat me really easily.
Again?
You mentioned
again,
that last week.
And again. Yeah, no, yesterday, I think I played 12 or 13 matches against the same guy. I won one of them.
That's how you improve.
Yeah.
You must feel pain.
And I was definitely getting closer to beating him towards the end of it, but he jumped off. He apparently got bored of kicking my ass, so he jumped off, and some other guy came on, and he was actually one of the best Little Mac players I've seen, and a good Little Mac player is dangerous, although I figured out the secret. Also, I was playing Jigglypuff, because I'm just like, why the hell not? I'm going to fight this other guy with Jigglypuff, and then he got off as soon as the match was about to start. I'm like, aw, and then it replaced him with Little Mac guy. I'm like, okay, I can beat this guy as Jigglypuff. I'm like, oh god, I can't beat this guy as Jigglypuff. And then I figured out a secret. Little Mac doesn't recover as quickly from his attacks as his animation makes it look like he does. There's like a half second interval where he finishes a smash attack and goes back to neutral stance, but he isn't actually able to take control. And I'm like, I saw the window and I Jigglypuffed him to death. That's probably my crowning achievement in online matches in Smash so far, is being able to Jigglypuff a really good Little Mac player.
So did he sing the Jigglypuff Game of Thrones song on his corpse?
No, actually, the last KO I got on him, we were both at like 140% damage, which is a lot for a Jigglypuff. And
I'm surprised you hadn't been knocked off before then with 140 damage.
I'm really good at racking up small amounts of damage on my opponent, but I always get hit by Smash attacks. Little Mac has no edge game, so he always has to stand in the middle of the stage, so that's always where he's knocking you from, which is probably the only thing that saved me, is that he was never guarding the edge, really. Anyway, I managed to send him to sleep, and they change how sleep works in this, or any status effect, really. The more damage you have, the longer it affects you.
That's been true since Super Smash Bros.
Oh, really?
For Jigglypuff Sing in particular.
I didn't know that. Well, I learned that today. But I managed to catch him with a Sing on the way down from an attack. Like, he was expecting me to land in a different spot and went over and did an up smash attack. I'm like, I'm just going to fall over here now and Jigglypuff. And then I rested on him to death.
Team Rocket sends their regards.
It was so good.
Well done.
That's probably my crowning achievement. It was pretty awesome.
Anything else? Any Abyssal Odysseys or...
I've not really played a whole lot of Abyssal Odyssey. I've kind of maxed out everyone's skills, so I'm not really sure what else to do.
You beat Monokemia.
No, what, Monokemia? Oh, yeah. Forever ago. You mean Grandia?
Okay, yeah.
No. I'm still in the last dungeon. I haven't played it since the last time we recorded. I played some FTL. I played some Super Mario World this morning.
Ah, so. Those are both good games.
I finished Link's Awakening.
I haven't yet. I suppose we can talk about what I've been playing then, because Link's Awakening is one of those things. I just beat Eagle Tower. It's one of the more complicated ones. It took me forever to remember you had to throw the bowling ball at the columns, so I was just stuck, like, wandering around, not sure what to do for a long time.
Are they arranged in a bowling pin format?
No.
It's not really a bowling ball so much as it's a giant ball bearing, but they're, like, columns you have to knock out. I remember that so well that every time I play Link to the Past with that one tower, I always think that that's the Zelda game where you have to throw a ball at columns.
Anyway, I was like, man, I know I have to use this ball for something, but maybe I have to go up this floor, maybe I have to fall somewhere, maybe I have to fight this mini-boss.
Turns out, nope.
Nope.
Balls and columns.
Just balls and columns. And bombs. I had to bomb that one secret door. That took me an embarrassingly long time to find with how telegraphed. It's like, bomb here, Link. Then bomb here.
What, there's an old man that's just like, bomb here, dumbass,
no,
bomb.
But it's surrounded by torches. And I'm like, I have to get down there somehow. But how? Then I played a little bit of Dive Kick.
Oh, yeah.
Because mostly to listen to podcasts while I play. They added Johnny Gat.
Dive Kick?
Yes.
Who's Johnny Gat?
He's from Saints Row.
Oh. Okay.
He's like the sociopath from... Okay. He's your sociopath's friend from Saints Row.
I have not played his Dive Kick story, so I don't know how he became involved in the Dive Kick circuit.
I love the way they integrated John Wick. So during the Hoxton breakout heist, Hoxton's like, John Wick, I never thought I'd see you again. How's the family? What, did I say something wrong?
So they actually did add the Hoxton thing?
Yeah, they finally did it. And when you're breaking him out, he's like in an armored truck because he didn't bring any of his gear. And he's basically like just sitting there snarking at you the entire time. And it's actually dependent on who's in your party at the time.
Okay, so we're gonna have to play that.
It's pretty good. I actually really like that heist too. So,
yeah, Dive Kick, and then a little bit of Don't Starve, which is a game I bought on Steam when it was $3 and then didn't play.
Yeah, I don't remember you talking about it much, so.
This is the first time I've actually played it.
That would be why.
It's a little Halloween-y. It's like Minecraft, but not as good.
And 2D and...
Well, you don't mine stuff. It's more about the survival aspects, and it's not like Minecraft. You're like, hey, now I have a cow, so I'm invincible.
I feel like I might like that a little better than, or I guess, better than I thought I might like it.
It also has some cool sanity mechanics where creatures change what they are. Like, rabbits become Beardos.
Beardos?
The more insane you are. And then they drop nightmare fuel, which you need. You need stuff that drops from the creatures that you only see when you're insane to build magical things.
Huh, oh, that's interesting. Neat.
Yeah, it is an interesting
trade-off. So it's kind of like Ghost Rock.
Yeah. But also, nightmare things drop monster meat, which lowers your sanity further. So you have to be careful about balancing.
So do you have to pick up the monster meat?
You don't have to, but the goal of the game is to not starve. So you need some sort of food source, too.
Gotcha. So while you're insane, your only food source is monster meat, but you also need to be insane to pick up nightmare fuel.
Yeah, it depends on how good your farms are, and, like, you could save up food, but food also spoils, and you can build an ice box to slow that down.
Okay.
But, like, the, like, main strategy I find is to find a savanna with lots of rabbits and just put traps over all the rabbit holes and come by, like, once a day. And then I'm also near some beefaloes, which I have to debate between killing for beef or letting live because they drop manure, which you need for farms.
Yeah, I remember watching Jason play that at one point before the game on Monday.
Everything about it sounds like I should like it, but that's, I really don't like the art style.
The art style in it is kind of sepia-toned, right?
Yeah, it's really dark, I would say, more than sepia-tone.
Well, it looked brown. Very brown when I watched him play it.
Depends on the biome you're in. Like, the savannas for sure are like that, and at night it's like that. Like, there are three phases of day. There's, like, morning, which looks fine, afternoon, which is very sepia tone, and night, which is practically black and white.
I mean, I like the idea of the contrast. I don't know.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is. Like, some of the recipes are interesting, and it is fun, but it's not great. It's also sort of got permadeath. Eventually, you can unlock, like, a meat effigy or something that lets you respawn with enough beard hair and some other stuff.
Beard hair?
Yeah, you can get it by shaving or from Beardos if you are insane enough to think those are a thing.
That's amusing.
That's weird.
I didn't think the main character was that beardy, but...
Well, it depends on how long you go.
Oh, touche. Do you actually just, like, build a meat golem, essentially?
I haven't done it, so okay. I don't know. That's my understanding. So, it's pretty interesting. It's fun. You have to not starve. And also, in the dark, terrible monsters come, so you have to have fire.
Say, what are your main methods of killing things?
Fire.
I have a spear.
Okay. Do you kill Beardos with spears?
I'm not insane enough. Like, I need the rabbits, my main source of food, so...
So you haven't driven yourself nuts?
No.
So how do you go nuts normally?
if you eat like flowers and certain uncooked foods, that lowers your sanity. Being around a knight lowers your sanity. Not having any friends lowers your sanity. So there are these pig men that you have to bribe with meat to hang out with you every so often. Or I have a sweet flower garland that stops me from going insane.
So what, like, where are all the other humans? Why are you out here not starving?
Not established.
Okay. Fair enough.
Something definitely happened, like, the start of the game is this guy who's like, oh, tough luck, kid. You better find some food. And then he, like, disappears. And you're like, oh, amnesia. Why are there pig people?
Maybe he's already nuts. He's just running around in Central Park.
That's Could entirely be. Possible.
So anyway, what have you been playing, Zach?
Well, because it's me, let's start with a big one. I've been playing a lot
Legends.
Of League of Legends.
I am shocked. Shocked to find gambling in this establishment.
Almost... like 2 weeks away from being a year I've been playing this game. This week, I got up my first Penta.
Oh, nice. Oh.
And I did it on a champion that's harder to do it on than what Jeremy did it. Well, because you used Jinx, right?
When she was mega broken.
When she was mega broken. I got my Penta from the jungle.
What?
You did it on Kha'Zix, right?
Yep.
Kha'Zix isn't that much harder than Jinx. Kha'Zix is a penta machine. He kills, he does more damage to things that are low health, and when he kills something, he gets to jump 3 champion lengths.
Yes, but he has to put himself in the fight as well. He has to get into the fight to do that.
He has stealth that makes him run faster, and a jump that's 3 champion lengths.
And if you build him wrong, you deal no damage, which is why you build him right, like I do, and you actually be able to get those kills. So
last time
managed...
on video games, it's not necessarily condoned or recommend Zach's Kha'Zix build.
My build is best build. I do really, really well on Kha'Zix with my build. I've done the best on Kha'Zix out of all of our friends with my build.
To be fair, we don't have to endorse or not endorse officially his build because we're not mentioning what it is. So.
Okay, well, it starts with... I'm not going to go into it because no one cares.
Exactly.
But I got a Penta, which made me really, really happy. That's basically the extent of it. I mean, we... It was me and my friends, 4 of us, and 1 random scrub who was terrible on the champion he was playing.
See, that's the problem. I wasn't there to take the kills from you.
Well, it was the top laner that was that. That was the thing. It made me really happy. We had a bad game after that, but that's beside the point. My Kha'Zix is getting better every time I play him. My leashing is much better. Or not my leashing, my blue handoffs are better than they used to be. I don't take nearly as much damage.
What is a blue handoff?
Well, it's okay. Where the jungler usually gives the blue buff, which grants like mana regen, cooldown reduction, and a couple of other things to the mid laner who can use it much better. And so if you do it wrong, the jungler usually start it and take a bunch of damage before the mid laner comes over to get it.
Oh, does the blue buff only apply to the person who killed the monster that grants it?
Yes.
Okay, I did not know that. So I thought it applied to your entire team.
No, the only buffs that apply to the entire team are Baron buff right now. And they're looking at making the dragon give one later. I made it to my provisionals, or my promotionals. I'm 1-1 in those to see if I can move up.
You need to beat 2 out of 3 games to rank up.
And my first game, Jeremy will think I'm lying when I say this. I played Braum. I didn't get a single kill.
Yeah, Braum is a support. Zach's very good at stealing kills on him. Incredibly very good. He's like a heat-sinking missile. He's like, what? My AD carry is going to get a kill. He might carry the game if he does that. Braum must be a big Russian man and take kill. Mid laner coming with jungler for 4v4. Braum must get quadra kill.
I got a triple kill on Braum the other day. It was pretty friggin' sweet. But, no, the reason I get so many kills secured on Braum is because I don't... It's the same with all my... supports. I don't stop attacking until whatever it is dead.
I feel like a support should not be doing that.
It depends.
You're wrong.
It's okay when the support secures the kill and it would have gotten away, but Zach will kill people who are in the middle of the entire team and be like, Braum must get killed. Braum shall jump to his friend who should ice an enemy to get double kill. Braum will use ult for triple kill.
I think that was how I got my triple kill too. Oh, no, I started with the ultimate, that's right. So, yeah, that's a thing. I lost my second promotional on Jarvan, which, okay, whatever. But after that, I've been playing more Assassin's Creed 4. I didn't do any story missions, but I've done a few more things. Well, I think I need to do like 1 or 2 more so I can get the diving.
Yeah,
be
probably.
Able to go diving on Rex.
You need
I can't
to get to the point
yet.
Where Blackbeard retires. because that's when the story really starts to suck.
I haven't done that. But so like I've been whaling, pirating for a little while. I forgot how to repair my ship.
Sharking,
yeah. Done some sharking. And then the last game I played, I only played it for about 10 minutes, but I still feel like I want to talk about it. I picked it up on Steam this week. I turned it on, was interested, got bored, stopped caring, stopped paying attention, and died.
Wow.
Did it?
Yeah.
Was it Don't Starve?
No, it wasn't Don't Starve. What do you think it was, Tyler?
I
can almost bet you're not going to guess.
Man, I mean, Jeremy already guessed Galciv before the podcast.
Civilization Beyond Earth is what I guessed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Galciv is a different game.
That hasn't come out yet. Well, Galciv 2 hasn't come out yet.
Galciv 3 hasn't come out yet. I own Galciv 2.
Well done.
And the entire galaxy.
Man, I don't know. I just can't think of what would cost $5 and suck that much. Which is odd, because normally things that cost $5 on Steam are actually pretty awesome. But
so the game
that
I was...
Mountain game?
Huh?
I know which one you're talking about.
So the game I was playing, I'd heard a lot about, and then I saw some thing on Game Theory.
Wait, is it Goat Simulator?
No.
Oh.
Game Theory hasn't done anything on Goat Simulator.
Well, I wouldn't know that. I don't watch Game Theories.
I think I'm like the only one that does.
Also, Goat Simulator is like $10. I watch it occasionally.
So the game I was playing that had this happen was Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh. Yeah, 10 minutes is about the right time to play Five Nights at Freddy's. You can probably get 20 minutes in it. That's a pretty good game, though.
For 5 minutes? Or for 10 minutes?
The problem is, because it's a horror game and nothing much is ever going on, I was like, I know there are 5 of these things. I wonder where the other 2 are at one point. And that's actually at the point when I stopped caring and just started flipping through monitors to see if I could find anything. And the rabbit killed me. But I'm like, whatever. I stopped caring because it's like, there's nothing going on. Nothing is happening. It's all the fun of being a security guard.
Yeah. Horror games are an interesting place. I actually forgot to mention this in the What Have You Been Playing, because it's not actually what I've been playing, but my brother bought a PS4 yesterday, so I'm probably going to get to play PT, and I'm pretty excited. It was downloading when you guys showed up.
Awesome.
And I might buy Alien Isolation to play. I'm more likely to buy Shadow Over Mordor and play that.
I've heard it's pretty good.
I kind of agree. At Five Nights at Freddy's, you have very little agency. It's not even like a task checkoff thing.
Waiting for stuff to occur.
I've seen it compared to Diner Dash, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense as a comparison. Like, it's Diner Dash, but it gives you better jump scares. I mean, it is kind of scary, and you're like, I'm going to check the monitors, and there's a face staring at you, and you're like, wasn't expecting that. But
I've also heard that if you stay in the monitor room too long, then they'll just like burst into the monitor room. So
that's actually what happens. That's when you die. If you don't close the door when one of them walks up to you, it'll kill you.
Well, one of them only activates on the second night. Is specifically programmed such as if you look at the monitors too much or too little, is when it will attack.
It'll just run down. Okay, that explains it, because that must be the fox.
Yes, it is.
It'll just come running down. I was trying to find it. I think I know where it spawns.
Yeah, it's at the like pirate place.
Like, I think I know where it looks like, but I just was like, I was trying to find it because I didn't see it.
I mean, as a game, it works okay because it increases the difficulty as the game goes on.
Well, the problem as a game is that your tasks are check monitors, close doors. Like, that's it.
I mean, it's trying to rob you of power to be a horror game. I appreciate it. I mean, the fact that it's not even 3D graphics and it looks that good is really impressive to me.
It's not 3D graphics?
No, it's all 2D forced perspective stuff.
Oh.
Which you can get away with because of how little motion there is in the game. I mean, it looks really impressive. It's a, like, good horror setting.
The guy who created this and clearly understood horror, because it's in a creepy place. It's an old, like, Chuck E. Cheese's type of thing with animatronics. And any place with kids and animatronics, after hours, is creepy.
It also has this interesting backstory that explains things, but is very careful not to explain everything. So you're sort of like halfway into, is this ghosts? Are these machines just crazy? I don't know, but am I crazy?
Yeah, the game theory thing was related to...
I haven't actually watched
like
it
the yet. Backstory and what the guy thought the story of this thing was. It's obviously not for me, because I'm like, I don't want to be scared. The atmosphere that the game has by taking away agency is one thing. It does a very good job with sound. one of the, like how it echoes is the, one of them will do like a little jingle thing and you can hear it echoing.
Like it'll sing.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. That's awesome.
And then it can teleport when it does that. And that's the cue that it's teleported somewhere. The game over screen is like a really creepy jingle. Like all the lights go out and then there's this really creepy jingle. That's if you run out of power specifically. I think it's been a while since I've played.
You actually played it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I talked about it on a previous episode.
I thought you'd just seen. I didn't think you'd actually played the game.
Yeah, it was $5. I was worth checking out to me.
I was asking Tyler if there was any way I could gift it to him because I think he'd get more out of it than I do. Probably. Unfortunately, you can't do that on Steam.
No, but you can like let him borrow your library.
That is true. I can sign into your account temporarily.
It's a pain in the ass to set that up, but I mean, I have access to his account.
There are two bears. There's Golden Freddy as well, and that's the one that teleports, right?
Golden Freddy. The bunny is the one that teleports. Golden Freddy has weird mechanics. I don't remember exactly how they work anymore.
No. Well, he can phase through the walls and stuff. I know that.
Yeah, he only spawns under certain conditions, though. You will never see him, like, wandering about on the cameras. There's a certain place where you look, and it can be slightly off. And like I said, I don't remember the mechanics. But if you do that, then he spawns in the room. And there's a way to avoid him, but I can't remember what it is. Like, it's something like you have to put down the monitors and then look again right away or something like that.
We still had to play Damned at some point.
Yeah. We all owned that and are not playing it.
Yep. Well, that's because Tyler gave it to everybody.
That is true. It was on sale, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you like horror, I would definitely check out the Five Nights thing. But for me, 10 minutes in, I got bored.
Well, we're in like a little horror game renaissance because Alien Isolation, very much a horror game. PT, like I said, very excited to play it. Like Five Nights at Freddy's is a lot less, like it's a horror game, but it's a jump scare simulator. It doesn't really like, it's not going to keep you up at night unless that sort of stuff really scares you.
I feel like Amnesia was at the forefront of this wave.
But this is, I think this actually might be a reaction to Amnesia 2 and Dead Space and being like, we want to make actually scary games. Or maybe they just think graphics are at that level now.
Generally, they're just starting to figure out what they can do about making scary games in general for gamers at this point. Because, I mean, you can make a scary movie because you have no agency over it. But in a game, you need some kind of gameplay, which is why Dead Space isn't scary, really, because they're like, hey, look at the scary monster. And it's like, I have a high-powered cutting tool. Well, scary monster's now in pieces. I don't care.
And I think they figured it out because people who played Alien and PT says the scary thing is, as a gamer, you know what you have to do.
You just don't want to do it.
It's not like you can't be like, don't go into that dumb closet, girl. Because as the gamer, you're like, oh, the progress is in the closet with the monster. And you can sort of psych yourself out. Also, I have Slender the Arrival on Steam.
I
played the free version. I haven't played the.
Yes, I only played the free.
What's the whole deal about Slenderman? I've seen a lot of that, and people are talking about how scary
he's
that is.
He's a.
Like,
see, if you don't know his origin, he's a creepypasta.
It wasn't even a creepypasta. It was a something awful, like, let's, like, make monsters in Legends thread. He's like a slightly doctored photo of a movie. Basically, he's a creature from German folklore that was made up in 2006. but it was a good, like, as a folklore creature and, like, a scary, you know, like just a generic monster, he sort of works. And then there was this show called Marble Hornets, which I actually quite liked. It really tapered off as it went further. But it was basically these two guys in college in a filmmaking class found the Slenderman myth, really liked it, and made like a found footage movie, but did it like YouTube style. Like, this is like our found footage YouTube videos, but it's we're uploading them on YouTube as they happen. And they were very good at keeping in character, like whenever they posted anywhere and turning off comments and stuff like that to make it feel real. Or obviously it's a production, but you know, you can sort of get swept up in it. And so there were copycats and Slenderman just became basically a horror monster.
So the idea is he like wigs out electronics that he's near. So lights will flicker, specifically recording devices screw up and he like appears behind you. He, like, follows people around and then kills them somehow. It's not really specified.
He's he who walks behind?
Yeah, he's essentially he who walks behind. So
only with no face and very nicely tailored suit. And usually he's described as having really elongated limbs. I mean, the Slender game is basically just a game where you're trying to find six MacGuffins while the Slender Man is stalking you. With the wigging out electronics, they do stuff like you're playing the game through a camcorder. And so as he gets near, instead of audio cues, your vision starts to sort of
blur.
Go camcordy.
Huh. It like goes staticky.
Oh, although, the free version is definitely worth checking out.
Although the Arrival has like this thing where you're trying to start generators and there's like a feral, like kind of like the witch from...
Yeah, that's it was written by the guys who wrote Marvel Hornets, and that's sort of a element from that.
The witch?
No, it's a guy in a mask, basically, who is working against them for purposes unknown.
But it, like, chases you down hallways. It looks a lot like the witch
I would
from
say it's more like
Left
the Hunter
Dead.
Than the witch, but...
Guy in a hoodie?
Yeah. Maybe we're thinking of different things. Like I said, I haven't actually played The Arrival. I bought it for, like, $3. I'm like, oh, I will probably want to play that at some point. $3 is worth that for me.
And it is the season.
Yeah.
So, well, it is the season when we're recording this, so...
Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to watch all the Dracula movies and failing.
Oh, I was going to say, I completely forgot to mention this, but speaking of Smash, did you see that the Wii one is going to have 8 players or
no.
8 player compatibility?
No, but that's exciting.
Also,
that's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, also the stages are huge by comparison to the DS one, so... And also they added Mewtwo into that one.
Oh, also cool. I was expecting Ice Climbers, but so, if they were going to add one.
Because that's why they nixed them is because the DS couldn't support it.
Yeah.
But apparently popular demand was we want more Mewtwo. And everyone's like, but... I don't know. I felt like Lucario was an adequate replacement for Mewtwo. But
I mean, I sort of do too, but eh.
He does a lot of the same stuff.
More characters is cool.
That is true.
Even if Mewtwo is a little lower quality because they added him later. And I'm not saying he will be, but...
I'm more excited for the 8 playerness, although...
Yeah, that is exciting.
Well, with 8 play, holy cow.
Yeah, I know, right? That would be so chaotic. I don't even know how you would manage
no,
that.
No, I was trying to think, you know... How many people usually show up to your house for one of our game nights? I'm like, holy cow, you could actually use... Everybody could get in on one game of that.
Yeah, say it's going
to... If they wanted to.
It's going to be 8 this weekend, so maybe more, actually. Anyway, 8-player Smash. Cool beans.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
Also, you can use the DS as the controller on the Wii one.
Ah, nice.
So
they are doing that a lot.
That's
but...
really cool, but I think that would be kind of a pain. I'd rather use one of the gamepads.
Well,
that's...
if you're used to the DS controls already, though...
They're actually Fair. Making a DS that's basically a collapsible Wii U gamepad. That's one they're coming out with that's going to launch simultaneously with the new Smash. I suspect for the purpose of being able to play Smash on it. So
that's interesting.
I'm really curious about how the competitive Smash 4 scene is going to develop.
It's one thing I really wish they would add is some sort of tier system, because it just matches you with random whoever.
Well, I mean like and, the competitive.
Oh, like actual competitive?
Yeah, like...
Like
what is the
who
Evo tournament going to look like? Because Hungrybox and Mango, who are like the top 2 Smash Melee players right now, both think it's going to take off and it's going to replace Melee like Brawl couldn't.
Oh, yeah. No, I like this game better than Melee. So.
Well, and competitive players think it is better than Melee. So it will probably take off. And I'm curious, will you be allowed to use a 3DS controller as a controller?
I don't see any reason why you
well,
wouldn't.
They wouldn't but... allow wireless controllers in Melee.
Oh, well, you can't not now,
weird.
So...
Well, I think you can.
You could
I
use the GameCube controller that they specifically ported specifically for this game, but...
I'm just curious to see what will the rules be. Will they allow you to use custom moves, or will it be standard?
By default, online, you can't, so
well,
I'd
I know, but
not.
They've never cared about what Nintendo says.
That is true. I would really prefer to be able to in ranked matches, because they add a bit of unpredictability to characters, and I really like that, but you can't in ranked matches, so...
I'm just curious to see if it will take off and what it will look like if it does.
It's pretty good. Although, that's actually one of the things I'm trying to do is, like, they give you kind of achievement-type things, and I'm trying to unlock, like, the one I'm currently doing is beat Classic with all the characters. One of the rewards you can get from doing any of the single-player modes is just customization options.
Yeah.
And I don't even have, like, I don't think I have even a fifth of them yet.
They are a cool idea.
I really like some of the differences. Like, they gave Pit instead of his normal arrow. He has a really big one that travels slower and you can't angle it, but it also penetrates. So, huh.
Sounds interesting. I also personally think the customization in any game like that is important.
It's real, like, it's all basically the same move, it's just slightly tweaked. Like, they give Mario a giant fireball that hits multiple times but also doesn't go very far. I don't know. They did a lot of interesting things. I'd be curious to see how that would affect online play or just competitive play.
All right, so our game this week, Knights into Dreams. Knight's a character that some people wanted in Super Smash Bros.
I can kind of see what it would behave like. Is But is, does it have a gender?
It's like a dream creature, so I don't know.
Yes and no.
I mean, both the boy and the girl become the.
I think they just help
clown
him or
thing.
I don't know. Okay. So Nights into Dreams is about an evil wizard who wants to take over dreams and does it by stealing people's core attributes.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah.
That explains the names of the levels.
Yeah. He created two creatures to help him, but one of them, Knights, betrayed him. You play as Chris and Clara. Is the guy's name Chris? That sounds right.
I don't think so, but I'll buy that.
Whose core each have a core attribute of courage, which he cannot steal. And therefore, they can help knights go get their other core attributes back. Those are like with little balls with like diamonds in them are.
Yeah.
And you get the red one steal because that's courage. This game is weird and like
kind
I really
odd.
Don't know where to start with it.
You're usually kind of flying along in a 2D plane.
I think
to
you've
go through
I think you've gone too far though, because when you start, I mean, you start with like. You choose the guy or the girl, and they have different levels.
And you're on foot until
you
go to the pedestal.
You're on foot, and then you're
and then you get
by...
mugged.
Yeah, you get mugged for your core attributes.
Something.
Which is, I want to talk about that, too, because you go up towards the pedestal to become knights, and like it goes like cutscene, and it grabs your attention.
I thought I had failed already the first time
I
it
thought
happened.
I walked into something I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah.
And like right off the bat, it, like it's showing you where you need to go, but you don't really have agency over going there and you can't go there directly. It's grabbing your attention. Like it's like Mario when you unlock a star, specifically Mario 64, and it like does the close up on it. But in Mario 64, that's say, hey, you did a good job. Here's where you need to go to finish. That's not really what's happening here. So it takes your agency. Even though it's brief for no reason.
And it's confusing. You can skip it, though. I accidentally skipped it the first time.
And, like, that's the key thing about this game. It does not tell you anything about itself. And while I will often, like, berate Zach and Tyler for not reading the instruction book, this game came out in 1996, the same year Super Mario 64 came out, a game that will teach you how to play it entirely by itself. You have to take a little into your own hands. There are signs throughout the world that say, hey, this is how you triple jump.
You actually have to read them.
Yeah. But like it starts out with like the cameraman coming and saying, hey, I'm the cameraman. I'm going to film you. Here's how you control me. And here are the basics.
Whereas this game is kind of like,
have fun, kid.
Good luck.
It also appears to be 3D and the parts as a kid are 3D, but you immediately become knights. And that's basically a 2D stage. It has some slight 3D elements.
When I started this, I immediately tried to go up because I'm like, I can see where I'm supposed to go. I need to go over there.
Yeah.
So I tried to tell myself to go over there. Spent like the entire time trying to figure out how to do that because I hadn't switched it to my 360 gamepad because I didn't realize you could do that because it didn't give me the option the first time I loaded the game.
Yeah.
But it kind of has a bait and switch right there at the end because like you said, the kid is a 3D plane because you move in a different angle to the two knights. So you're like, okay, it's 3D. But then you become knights, and it's like, no, it's not. It's 2D.
And then your stick doesn't work the way you think it does, and you can't go into the background, even though there's obviously stuff in the background.
Well,
and like...
because the background is where you go later. Like, each level is divided into four, like, tracks for knights to go along.
Yeah, and it makes more sense after you play it for a little bit, but it's super confusing at first.
Yeah, it's odd. Like, it feels like this kind of thing would work really well as an open world type of thing, but they didn't have an open world. They had a very tracked world.
Yeah, I feel like you could use the shoulder buttons for depth or height.
Yeah. Right. Well, the goal of this game is to get...
Does Saturn have shoulder buttons?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a Saturn, so I kind of need someone to inform me.
The shoulder buttons even do something in this game. It's never really useful or helpful.
What do they do?
Yeah.
They're like acrobatic moves. They're good when you're on like... did you ever get to like those poles you spin around?
Yeah.
Like they help you around those, but... And also, like, if you're, you don't really get stuck exactly, but if you go into a wall, you sort of, like, are in a crouching pose on it, you can hit them to jump off from there more quickly.
Oh, okay.
I think acrobatic moves is what the controls say they do.
So basically, you're in a 2D race course, and you're collecting orbs is your main objective.
Yeah, you need 20 blue orbs. You can get them by flying into them, or if you do a loop, you'll attract all the nearby objects to you, or anything in the loop.
It's important to note, when we say in the loop, you leave a, like, streamer behind you, and you can create shapes with it. Occasionally, it'll enter, like, a bonus mode where it gives you extra points for creating fun shapes with your streamer.
Is that what that did?
Yeah, it took me a while to figure that out.
Okay,
but
I was like, it told me I did a medium loop.
There are also some enemies that you can kill by looping them.
That's the main way to kill enemies. But if you just run into them, you kind of grab them and just sort of do a handstand loop around them anyway.
There's actually a boss that's just entirely that.
Yeah.
So what exactly do the rings you fly through do? Because you fly...
They give you points and boost.
Okay, I thought it was just kind of worked as a track of here you go this way. But it bothered me whenever I missed one, so I always went back and got it.
So after you've collected enough orbs by racing around this somewhat convoluted racetrack, you get to, like, a dream attribute collector and dump your orbs into it, which causes it to overload.
Yeah, it's weird how it's, like, not... You have the start of the course, which is where you need to get to finish, and then also somewhere in the course is this thing that you need to deposit 20 orbs in.
And usually you'll have to go around the course more than once in order to get the requisite number of orbs.
Usually there are just enough orbs hidden around that you can get 20 right before you hit it.
Oh, well,
and that's
maybe
how
I
you
just
get
suck.
Higher scores usually. But
by going through once and only once?
Yeah. But like Zach said, you are drawn to the rings, which for the most part is the course. But a lot of times there are just a couple orbs or even like a like full thing of like 10 of them in a secret spot if you go up in a random place. And that's kind of dissatisfying to me because...
It's about speed.
It seems like it is. This was made by Sonic Team.
It really feels
like it. Like I can definitely see influence from... the early Sonic games, and the influence it had on Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2.
Once I figured out what this game was, I'm like, man, this is like Sonic the Hedgehog with a crazy Harlequin thing.
Well, and you're flying, which does, I think, change the game pretty big amount. But
it does, because now, instead of just basically the ground you're running on, plus what you can jump to, all of that space is viable that you can go up and down on. So they're able to hide stuff in random locations and just make it harder to find what you're looking for to begin with in the greater amount of space you have to work with.
Also, because it's easier, it lets you feel more like you're going fast. We should talk about the failure states of this game. Each little quarter of the game where you need 20 orbs, you have 120 seconds. If you get hit, you lose 5 seconds. But if you run out of time on the first 6 levels, it's a little different later. You just turn back into the kids and have to go back to where you become knights. Or if you have enough orbs, you can jump into the thing that collects them and then go back and finish. It's just really weird, and it gives you so much time. It's so easy not to turn into the kid once you know what you're doing that it just feels like a really weird and unnecessary part of the game because it's also not fun. The fun part is being knights and going, "Wee, I'm getting orbs!" Paraloop.
Fun is relative in that state.
The segue with the kids is weird because they control kind of clumsily. I mean, obviously they aren't the main focus of the game.
Do you really feel like the kids are necessary to this game?
No. There's one thing or one part where I turned into one of the kids and like a clock was trying to wake me up. And I think you can actually lose a stage if you get woken up by an alarm clock.
Huh.
Which is interesting.
That never happened to me, but I'll take your word for it.
So one thing I really liked about this is that as you're going on, there are some places where you turn your perspective, so you're looking at knights from overhead, and you're, like, looking down on a scene.
Yeah.
I found those to be really jarring. Like, I got...
They were awkward.
I had the, oh man, I can't control this all over again feeling.
I agree with that, but I really like how surreal it felt. I don't know. This entire game has sort of a surreal quality to it, which makes sense because it's supposed to be about dreamland. But that in particular really evoked a dreamlike state to me.
The music helped evoke that for me.
That
like,
definitely
it's very
helps.
Like cloudy and dreamlike.
They did a good job with that. The music wasn't obtrusive enough that I noticed it on a bad end of things, but it did enhance the gameplay experience, which is what they should be doing with it anyway.
Yeah, they were kind of like somewhat upbeat house tracks. It's pretty good. I actually remember commenting on it to Alex while I was playing it.
Yeah, I like the loading screen music is what I really remember, but even the play music is pretty good. So then, like, once you go through the 4 tracks, you fight a boss, and this is where I feel the game really struggles, because it felt really unclear to me every boss fight, what I was supposed to be doing. And
they don't really tell you a whole heck of a lot.
If you fail on the bosses, you get a game over and have to start all over again, which feels really jarring.
And it's a non-trivial commitment to complete one of the tracks.
I mean, it's like 10 minutes at most. It's not that big a deal. But the game is so hand-holdy and the failure states in a level are so forgiving that the, oh, now you have to start over from the beginning because you didn't know what the hell you were doing.
Kind of
and we didn't
really
tell you. They don't even give you a boss life bar. I think that would have been enough. Like, the first boss for the boy is this, like, blow-up doll that you have to throw through terrain. But I did, like, the first one, and it didn't seem to hurt it.
And you're like, why am I doing
this? It just bounces off everything, and I like, okay.
I mean,
I guess I keep
it, like,
knocking it through a bunch of stuff and see what happens. So I just kept knocking it through terrain.
And, like, the first girl boss is a dragon, and maybe it was just me, but the hitboxes on it seemed really uneven. I feel like I would attack it all the time, like I had always been attacking it, and I would get hit.
See, I didn't have that experience. I just didn't think I was hurting it. I kept going at it because I'm like, I'm knocking its head off.
Yeah, that,
I'm either
that
doing
was
something right, or I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing with it. But this is actually giving me some kind of catharsis to knock this thing around, so I'm just going to keep doing it. And then I noticed its tail was getting shorter, and I'm like, oh, clearly I'm doing it right.
That's. I feel like it would help if they at least flashed red.
Just
the
life bar. That's all you would need.
Yeah.
Show the player that they have done something to it.
Like, there are two bosses that I beat, and I don't know how I beat them. Like, I think I know in both cases, but I'm not sure. One of them, I was doing two things, and I really don't know which was being effective or if it was both.
That is a failure in game design. The player should always know why they won the fight.
Maybe
if it is, I got
game?
Lucky, then okay, fine. But a player should almost always know when they get into a game like this, like Mega Man, where it's like, I know why I won that fight. It's because I did X. When you're like, I don't know how I beat that guy because I don't know how I was even supposed to hurt him, then you screwed up.
Yeah. I did like the fish launching boss. That was probably my favorite.
But that also, like, you, like, go into the launching things and strike to hit it, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes that would hurt me when I hit it, and I was like, is it attacking
really?
Me right now? What's going on here?
That's weird. I never had that happen.
Time, I'm like, oh, obviously I have to hit these things and launch into it, and every time it hurt me. And it got just really awkward because, like, you have to go along the sides. There'd be this, like, awkward freeze frame, and then it would teleport me, like, in this really awkward-looking, like, cut back to where I could be.
Were you playing the original version or the remastered version?
I was playing
version?
The remastered version.
Okay, yeah, I have no idea then, because that never happened to me.
Yeah, I just played the original version.
Did you get a corrupted download?
I don't think so. Yeah, the Sega Saturn Dreams?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The brand new version has much better graphics.
Does it? I never played the old version.
Yeah, the old version looks like, imagine what Mario 64 looks like and apply that filter to this, to the remastered version. Also, they retextured all of the orbs. The orbs look a lot better in the remastered version. They look almost just like squares that are kind of circular in the original.
Yeah, it did not look good in the original.
Oh, the joys of early polygons.
I think I got the furthest. Each kid has three levels. They get a fourth level, but you only unlock it if you have a C rank on all of that kid's levels. So I got Claire's. I couldn't get Chris's. I actually kind of like that because that enforces, hey, this is a game you're supposed to be mastering. But they don't tell you how to improve your score. They don't tell you, hey, time is super important, or hey, the boss fight is important, or make sure you go through all those loops because that's how you are going to rack up the points. So,
I remember seeing like a tooltip or something that says that after you deposit the orbs into the thing, anything else you pick up is worth more than normal. I'm like, oh, okay. That was after I had already done like three or four levels. So.
Yeah, but even then, okay, but do I get a time multiplier? So should I then like spend as much time as I can collecting things and finish the last second?
Or should I zip down there to get as much time bonus as you can?
Or should I be in between and make sure I go through all the loops, but
and it
still
doesn't
focus
do,
on speed?
Like at the end of every lap, it gives you a score for that lap, and it doesn't do like a tally for the lap or anything. It just like does a roulette thing and then stops on the score you got.
I mean, you can see your score in the upper right-hand corner, so you can kind of see what's improving it, but
it's confusing. It's not explicit enough, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
that's
this game
the entire game's problem is you have to stumble your way through it. And I think there's an okay game underneath it, but
that's, I actually really think this is a cool idea for the time. Like, it was one of the first 3D perspective games to come out on a console, and it was neat as a concept.
And it looks way better than Sonic 3D Blast, even if the 3D is less real.
But it was clearly not strong enough to save the Saturn.
Was anything strong enough to save the Saturn?
Well, if they'd had some better games on it.
There's Space Station number 5.
Yeah,
is that
there's
the name Garen's of that game?
Greed, and
but Garen's Greed wasn't out here.
No, it wasn't. And the remake of Castlevania Symphony of the Night. So yeah, not a stellar library.
I mentioned before we started recording, I had heard so many great things about this game. I was just really
disappointed.
Lots
of people like it, and I see what there is to like. Also, the fourth level for each kid, instead of playing knights, you play the kids, but they're flying around. Huh. The only difference is they don't have the paraloop to like suck items in. And now you don't restart the time every time you finish a course.
You have like a total time limit.
Yeah, and if you run out of time, you actually just...
Game over.
Game over. And also, it was weird, like, the way you start, I was just, like, jumping around. I'm like, I guess I jump off here, and I jumped off, and it, like, gave me a death animation. And then I was flying, like, knights, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting.
Weird.
But I didn't finish that level. And I was not going to get all C's on the other kids' levels to see what his was like.
I suspect I might go finish this game. I had no problem getting a C at least on them. So.
See, I was really struggling with like Claire's first level for some reason. I got C's on her second and third and the third Chris level, but for some reason it took me like 10 tries to get a C on her first level. Part of it, I think, though, is that Dragon Boss kept giving me weird hit detection.
That is
and so
weird.
I couldn't beat him quickly.
You do have to go to at the top of his head instead of the front of his head.
Yeah, that's so, what I was doing.
I don't know. That's weird.
Search me.
I don't know, I feel like I might finish this. On the other hand, I kind of feel like I wasted $10 on it, so...
Yeah.
Well, given that you don't normally pay that much for our games, I can definitely understand why you think you wasted $10.
Well, but, like, twice as much as Mega Man?
Yeah.
$3 more than Mega Man X?
Not really worth it.
Like, yeah. So anyway, Zach, what are we playing next week?
Kirby's Dream Course?
No, not Kirby's Dream Course.
Kirby's Avalanche.
No, nothing to do with Kirby.
Kirby's Source? Oh.
Ha, gotcha, the Mario Kart. I was thinking about Mario Kart, but I decided,
Link's
you know,
Crossbow Training.
No. None of Nintendo's flagship franchises. Ha, gotcha. What we're going to do is we're going to play...
Master Chief Returns?
Shut up. We're going to play Nobunaga's Ambition.
Which I'm super excited about, because Gurren's Greed, a game I struggled through even though it's not in English and is incredibly complex and has all sorts of text, is based on this game.
So apparently this game is available on the Wii Virtual Console and the Wii U Virtual Console. And if you are lucky enough, it was apparently on the Genesis.
They also did a Pokemon and this game crossover at
oh,
one
yeah.
point.
Oh,
really?
I forgot about that. What's, yep. Yeah, it's on the DS.
I saw that. I didn't think it was a crossover with this game specifically. I thought it was just a generic Pokemon crossover with Japanese history.
Nope. Nobunaga's Ambition Pokemon crossover, where they use Pokemon to do battle instead of regular.
I kind of figured that was how that was. But at any rate, Nobunaga's Ambition... I don't think there's a subtitle.
I can't even think of a tagline for this.
Next time on Last Time, we'll be just like a samurai.
Yo.
Gotta go. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2014.
All the video games and other media mentioned herein are copyright of their respective owners.
Unfortunately, I don't own Square Enix. You can contact us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com, or tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com,
or Jeremy, G-E-R-E-M-Y, @lasttimeonvideogames.com.
And the best one, Zach@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Our primary source of interaction is lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can find all sorts of written material in addition to the podcast.
If you want to follow us on Google+, plus.google.com/plus/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you're one of those weird people who uses Twitter, we are @LTOVG.
Quick press X, too late, you failed, the podcast is over.